Morning. Today's Daf and Erchin is Daf Ches. We're starting the new parak today, second parak of the Masechta. And we deal in this parak a lot with ranges. We're going to go from one number to a second number. We're going to start with the topic of Erchin, and then the Mishnayos are going to move on to different topics. So in the course of this parak, so we are going to be really covering a lot of interesting topics through our Chas, all having to do with numbers, all having to do with the range. That is a very quick preview of the second parak. The first mishnah deals with erchin, and then after that, no more erchin. Ein erachim pachus misal v'lo yosar chamishim sela. So the mishnah opens up with the discussion in terms of what is exactly going to be the range for erchin in terms of how much money a person is going to have to give. So I know I'm a little bit of a broken record on this, but but obviously this is erchin. This is the time to keep repeating the basic ideas. So erchin is an instrument in which a person is going to be donating to the Beis HaMikdash. He's going to be doing so by giving the erech of somebody. Erech literally translates as a value, but value over here is really just more of an assessment. It's based on a person, but really based on only two qualities of a person: his age and his gender. Once you have these two pieces of information, you know exactly how much money a person is on the hook to have to give. Open up a Chumash, Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Bechukosai, Perich of Zion, first day Psukim, and you will see there the Torah records a schedule in terms of how much you're going to give based on an age and on a gender. So if you are a male between 20 to 60 years of age, so that means that your Erech is going to be 50 Shkalim. That's the maximum, that's the most a person will be on the hook to give if he gives the Erech of somebody. Whose Erech does he have to give? So it could be anybody. Meaning it could be his own, it could be somebody else. The person just simply needs an age and a gender. What if the gender is confused? So we already discussed that back in the first parak. Tum Tum and Androgynous do not have an Erech because they are not definitively neither male nor female. What is the smallest amount that a person is going to give? So again, open up the Chumash and you'll see the smallest amount that a person gives is going to be 3 shkalim. 3 shkalim based on the fact that a female between the ages of 1 month and 5 years of age. So her erech is going to be 3 shkalim. Can we go lower than that? The answer is yes. Yes, we can go lower than that. Because there's also something called hesegad. Hesegad is the idea where a person made a commitment to give an erech and he cannot afford it. Okay, so is it a great opportunity to tell him you shouldn't have made the erech? Yeah, it's a fantastic opportunity. On the other hand, however, the Torah has a special assessment for such a scenario. And that assessment is what's called hesegad, and the lowest amount that he's going to give under special assessment is going to be 1 shekel. Okay, and there you have it. So in terms of the maximum of the range, so that's clear at 50 shekelim. In terms of the minimum of the range, so there really are 2 numbers to deal with. The 3 shekelim, which is an actual erech of a person, and there's also 1 shekel in terms of a special assessment. Can't go lower than 1 shekel. Mishnah tells us, so the smallest number that we could deal with is 1 sela, and the highest number is 50 slaim. Ketzad, so let's say, for example, Nasan sela vehashir. Let's say he gave the sela and then he becomes wealthy, and Nosin klum. In other words, once you're giving under the category of special assessment of hesegad, and you gave your 1 shekel, so that's it. And if subsequently, let's say you do come into money, and you do become wealthy, that's not going to affect the fact that you are now have fulfilled your obligation, your financial obligation of having paid. Pachos misela v'hashir, nosin chamishim sela. If let's say you gave pachos misela, you gave less than a sela. So if you gave less than a sela, so because that is less than the base amount that one can give in order to relieve his obligation, so that means that he has not relieved his obligation. And so therefore, if he comes into money subsequently, so then he's going to have to pay chamishim sela, the full 50 sela. Hayu b'yadav chamesh salayim. So now let's say as follows. Let's say he committed himself to give 50 salayim and he has nothing close to that. But he's not dirt poor. He's got 5 salayim on him. Now, in general, we've asked this question before, and it's a fair question to ask. The Mishnah is not going to deal with it, neither is the Gemara. But in other words, is he now obligated to give his last 5 salayim that he has on this earth in order to fulfill his obligation? No, the answer is yes. The answer is clearly yes. In other words, but if it's a mitzvah, so don't we cap the amount of money you have to spend on a mitzvah? But the answer, I'm not sure if it's the answer, but the approach is actually really simple. It's not just a mitzvah. It is a financial obligation. It's a financial obligation you created, but still, it's a financial obligation. If you owe the money, you owe the money. It's going to leave you with nothing. Okay. And in other words, that's a... I don't... It's... You know...
How can you take his money without him declaring what he's given?
Right. What? I'm still a little bit confused.
He's holding the money in his hand and he's making him give the entire amount that he has.
Right.
But
right.
He didn't pledge it.
No, he did pledge it. We're talking about a case where he did pledge it. If he didn't pledge it, so then he gets to hold the money. No, we're talking about a case where he's committed. He's committed and he owes the money. So now he has five salaim. And so now the question is as follows. So now... He's clearly going to fall under the category of Hesed Yad. He's going to get a special assessment. That part's clear. He doesn't have the 50 slime. But now that he's in special assessment, so how much is he going to be assessed for? Is he going to be assessed for the money that he has? Or maybe his assessment is just going to be for one sella. Reb Meir Omer Einu Nosein Ela Achas, V'Chachamim Omer Nosein Es Kulan. So here you have Machlokes HaTanaim. Reb Meir says that once he falls under the category of special assessment, so he doesn't have the 50 that he committed himself to, and he has five, so he doesn't have to give the five. He gives one, and one is going to be sufficient. So the special assessment will take him all the way down to one. Meanwhile, the Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say no. In other words, look, you committed yourself to 50 slime. You don't have 50 slime. You're under special assessment. Okay, but you have five slime. You're going to give the five slime. You should have given 50, but you don't have 50. So you give what you have, and if you have five, so you're going to give five. And then, Ein Na'arachim Pachos Misel V'lo Yosra Chamishim Selah. And then the end of the Mishnah is repetitive. The Mishnah says that the range of Erchin is from one sell to 50 slime. The obvious question, what is the Mishnah doing here repeating itself from what the first point that it already made? And the Gemara is going to obviously ask that question and respond to that question. We start with the Gemara, Ein Na'arachim Pachos Misela Minalan. So how do I know that Erchin is no less than a sell? The Pasuk says, V'chol Erchecha Yebeshekol Kodesh. We saw this drasha already in the first parak. We're now seeing it again in the beginning of the second parak. The pasuk says that erkecha yeh b'shekel kodesh. Now the simple pshat of the pasuk is that we're just talking about the currency that you're using in terms of paying your shkalim. You're paying in shekel, right? Shekel, by the way, of the Torah is what the Mishnayos refer to as sela. Shekel and sela are equivalent to one another. So the v'chol erkecha yeh b'shekel hakodesh. So the currency that you use is shkalim. And kol harachim shata ma'arich lo yeh p'chus mishekel. And so that means to say, well, now we're darshaning. We're saying that the pasuk is also alluding to the fact that even when he's under the special assessment of Hesed Yad, so he's not going to be giving anything less than one shekel. V'lo yosar chamishim slime, and no greater than 50 slime, t'chziv chamishim. Well, that's because we're just reading the pesukim in the Torah, and we see in the schedule that the largest amount that you're going to be giving is 50 shkalim, and that's going to be for a male between the ages of 20 to 60. Hayu bayad of chamisha. Now, let's say you committed yourself to 50. You have five shkalim in your hand. So what do you give? How much do you give? So you're obviously, again, like I said back in the Mishnah, you're going to be under the category now of Hesed Yad, and you're going to be given a special assessment, and that special assessment is not going to tell you what, that you're going to have to give the five that you have or just one. So we saw together, it's a machlokus in the Mishnah. So my time with Rav Meir, so Rav Meir says you're going to give one. Ksiv, chamishim, ksiv, shekel. O chamishim, o shekel. Well, the way Rav Meir understands is that when the Torah gives these two numbers, they are not ranges, they are just simply points. They're just simply, go back to your number lines. So you could do a couple of things with your number lines. You can actually create a range in between the two numbers, or they're just simply points on the number line. And Rav Meir says it's not a range, it's just simply points on the number line. The Torah is telling you that these are the significant points. So it's either going to be one shekel, which the Torah makes reference to, or it's going to be the 50 shekel, which the Torah clearly articulates, but it's nothing in between. So if you are not able to give the 50 shekel, so then you give the one shekel. And v'rabanan, ha'ula chol arachim shatam arach lo yeh p'chus mishekel, hu da'asa. Now the Chachamim say, no, that pasuk we already explained. That pasuk is just giving us the base minimum a person is going to give if he is being put into special consideration. But it's not telling us that these are points on the number line. It's just simply telling us what's the lowest point. But then after that, what do you do? Range. It goes from one shekel all the way to 50 shkalim. Hechadi yisle amakrash, yirtasi yad, hanoder, v'arei yadom aseges. But let's say you have more than one shekel. Let's say you have five shkalim. So under those circumstances, Chachamim say, okay, so we're talking about a range. We're not talking about points on the number, on the line. And so within a range, so you are going to be given anywhere between 1 to 50. You committed to 50, obviously, if you have the 50. You're going to be giving the 50 shkalim, but you have 5 shkalim, so now you're going to be bringing the 5 shkalim, even though you're under special assessment, but that's how much you have. Rav Meir, now, as far as Rav Meir is concerned, how is he going to understand the psukim as the Chacham just presented? How hu yad hanoder velo yad hanidar hu da'asa. So Rav Meir says that the pasuk is coming to tell us the following. We know that the person who cannot afford the 50 shkalim that he committed himself to, so we know he's going to be put under special assessment. This special assessment is going to be based on whose financial records. Who is going to have to give the returns of the last 2 years? Is it going to be the noder or the nidar? Now, if you and I were to think about it, it kind of seems obvious, meaning we're talking about the person who is paying, the one who committed himself to this financial obligation. The Gemara is entertaining at least a havamina. It's a havamina that maybe the financials that we're looking at is not the noder, but rather the nidar. And if I could just for a moment defend the havamina, meaning because consider, it's true that it's coming out of your pocket, but it's based on whose portfolio. It's not based on your portfolio, it's based on that person that you were ma'arech. So since it's based on him, so maybe in terms of a special assessment, that too is going to be based on him. That's the havamina. But the maskana, of course, is no. The maskana, and that's what that's how Rabbi Meir is learning the psukim. The maskana is there to tell us asher tasig yad hanoder. That it's, well, the Torah doesn't say the word noder, but asher tasig yad. It's the person who himself is financially suffering, who made the commitment. It's based on his financials and not based on the subject of the Erchin's financials. V'rabbana lav mimele shamas mina. De'echad yad ma'asegah shakol minei. So Chacham said to Rabbi Meir, I agree with you. Meaning, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what the pasuk is telling us. But your point is not to the exclusion of my point. Your point is correct, and so is mine. Your point is that whose financials do we look at when doing this special assessment? The noder, the one who committed himself to the obligation. But on top of that, I'm also telling you that my point also comes into play, which is, and how much? One shekel is just simply the base minimum. But if the person has more, so then he's going to pay more. Okay, so what do we have over here? Machlokas HaTanaim. In terms of when a person's under the category of Hesed Yad, so how much does he give? Does he give one shekel if he cannot afford that which he committed himself to? Or does he give how much he has on hand? Machlokshim Rameir and the Chachamim. We'll see later on. The Halacha falls like the Chachamim.
Can you just annul his nether?
No.
So, I didn't know that I could afford it.
No, it's more. I know we're using the words neder, but it's more than just a neder. It is a financial commitment that he made.
And there's no canceling it.
No.
You use this concept of Hesek Yad in other realms, like the Korban or...
The Torah tells us Beferish in the Parsha of Erchin that there's an option of Hesek Yad. So here there's an option of Hesek Yad. We don't have it elsewhere. Okay. Amar v'adda ba'ava hayu b'yad of chamei shalayim v'amar erki alai v'chaz v'amar erki alai. Person has 5 shalayim. Now, clearly over here, this person is not making great financial decisions in his life. Okay, but again, I know, but the point's obvious, and I said it, and okay. We can all take off our fatherly hats and now deal with the case in hand. So he said, I want to give the erech of somebody whose value is a 50 shkalim. And then he repeated it, even though he has 5 shkalim. Okay. I know. We're all thinking the same. We're all thinking the same thing. Okay. You need an advisor. You need a financial advisor. But anyway, or just simply a good friend who's ready to help you and guide you in life. But okay, notwithstanding. So now he's on. He just made now 2 commitments. Now that he made 2 commitments. So let's talk a little bit about when a person is financially committed. When a person's financially committed. So there's something in halacha referred to as a shibud. A shibud means now that not only are you committed, but also your money as well is going to be committed. Now, when I say your money, also your real estate as well is going to be committed. Now, truth of the matter is that when we talk about your real estate being committed as well, so that has to have a document. In other words, that needs to start because, as we know, for karka to be mishubud, for your lands to be mortgaged against your obligations, so that has to be contractual. And is this contractual? So we already saw it's an open-ended question because on one hand you didn't write out any contract. On the other hand, there is a contract already written out. It's called the Torah. So is something written in the Torah considered as if it's contracted? So we just went through this debate just the other day in the Daffin. Okay, so that's an open-ended question. But right now, for our purposes right now, we're just discussing the basic idea of a shibud. And a shibud means that, look, I have monies, and those monies now are going to be mortgaged against this obligation. And so now I have two obligations, and those two obligations are both, each one of them going to be 50 shkalim, and right now on my hand I only have 5 shkalim. Okay. So now, nasan arba lishniya. So let's say that I go ahead and I give four of the shkalim over to the, on behalf of my second obligation. Now my second obligation, let's call that a second mortgage. Okay. So the echal rishona. And then what I did is I gave one shekel to satisfy my first obligation. Yasa yideshtehem. So oddly enough, you went out of sequence. In other words, you should not have paid the second mortgage before the first mortgage. But still, under these circumstances, you have fulfilled your obligation. My time. Now, this requires an explanation. What is the explanation? The Gemara gives it. Ba'chov mu'uchar shekanem v'gavam ma'shegavagavam. So we start off with a halacha, which intuitively is not going to sit well, but it is the halacha. And that is that when your second mortgage comes and collects, now he's your second mortgage, which means that he's second in line. So that means to say that really the first person with the first mortgage obviously is there first in line. And so therefore, correct procedure obviously should be is that if there's a person who has two obligations to pay, and one of them is first mortgage, second one, second mortgage. Obviously, second mortgage comes second, and first mortgage comes first. And so, therefore, obviously, in the order in which you have to pay it out, you pay first to the first mortgagee, then to the second. But the halacha says that if the second one comes and collects first, so his collection is recognized, even though he jumped the line, even though he cut in front of the first person. So I understand it's a difficult halacha to understand. Meaning he is the second mortgage, it's not the first. On the other hand, we can't ignore the fact that he is owed money. He is obligated the money. So if he comes and collects, so bid the evid. So post facto, the collection is recognized. Now be idna diav lishniyah mishab l'rishona. But at the same time, however, you cannot ignore the fact that those monies were leaned against his first obligation. Now mind you, by the way, that even though we're talking about, I hope I'm not confusing, because I am comparing a simple scenario of mortgages where there are two different people. Over here, it's not exactly two different people. Meaning, I made a first obligation of Erchin, and of course, the beneficiary is going to be the Bet HaKabayis. And I made a second obligation, it's the same beneficiary. It's still going to be the Bet HaKabayis. So the cases, I understand, are not exactly in parallel with one another, but still, the point is going to be effectively the same point. If I pay my second obligation first, so on one hand, using the principle of second mortgage who comes and collects but the evidence works, so that means that over here it works. At the same time, you cannot ignore the fact that that money was owed for your first obligation. So be'ina di'av l'rishona su leslay. Now, as you're paying off your first obligation, what do you have right now? You paid four for your second obligation. You only have one left for your first obligation. So now you fulfill both obligations. Meaning on one hand, remember, you're in the parsha of Hesed Yad. So this is all you have. On the other hand, you have two commitments. Now, obviously, by the way, just a point I should have made at the beginning, we're not subscribing right now to Reb Meir. Because according to Reb Meir, it's one shekel for one, it's one shekel for the other. Once you're under special assessment automatically brings you to one shekel. So the question over here is not going according to Reb Meir. The question is going according to the Chachamim. Now, the Chachamim say whatever you have to pay. You have five shkalim. You have two obligations. So when you pay the second one first, and then you go and you pay the first one, so under those circumstances, you have fulfilled your obligation. Now consider, wait one second. Now consider, what if I did in the other direction? What if I did four and one? Four for my first obligation, and one for my second obligation. Now watch what happens. Nasan arba, we're on the top of Chesamad Aleph. Nasan arba, l'rishon v'achas l'shniyah. So let's say you give four for your first obligation, and one for your second obligation. So now, yideshniya yatsa. You fulfilled your second obligation. Why? Because how much money did you have left? You had one shekel left for your second obligation. How much did you give? One shekel. Good. It's what you had. It's what you paid everything you had. You fulfilled your second obligation. Did you fulfill your first obligation? The answer is going to be no. Because when fulfilling your first obligation, how much did you have? Five. How much are you required to pay for your first obligation? Five. Because that's what you have. And that's the first obligation. So because you only paid four of the five for the first obligation, you haven't fulfilled your first obligation. So under those circumstances, second one and now it's been satisfied. First one has not been satisfied. Kul mishtabim l'rishona. Because all that money is meshubad for the first obligation. Okay, I know the idea of the Gemara right now is a little bit mind-bending, but if you think it through, it actually works out. Meaning if you paid out of order, which really you shouldn't have done, and again, the things he shouldn't have done, he shouldn't have committed two times over for a 50 shekel obligation when all he has is five shekelim. Okay, but we're past that. In other words, but even now as he's paying both obligations and he's paying both under the principle of Hesegad, still, if he goes two, then one, so for two, so look, all that money really was first owed to number one. Any money that two is receiving, that's fine. Two received four, fine. And now all he has left for one, so he pays one, that's all he has left. But if he went in the other order where he paid first one and he only paid one four when he had five, so he hasn't satisfied his obligation for number one. He paid number two, his remaining one shekel, that's great. That's all he has left. So number five, the second obligation gets a check. First obligation, deficient. Right. Okay, yes.
Didn't he make the obligation to himself simultaneously? Talk to David, he said one right after the other.
Well, that's coming up in just a moment. We're assuming right now, in these first two cases of the Gemara, we're assuming that they were sequential and not simultaneous. Okay, you want to know about simultaneous? Coming right up.
If the guy doesn't have money and the mitzvah are to be chai by him, why are you like depriving this an income that he has?
Why does the Torah allow for this?
Yeah, I mean the guy is not gonna have any money left basically.
Correct. It's correct. He doesn't have any money. So now, let's say he makes these two commitments and makes them simultaneously. So now the Gemara says, at this point in time, I don't know. And the Gemara expresses its I don't know, articulates it. So maybe we could say that in terms of their ability. Now, I say they, by the way, again, I'm just going to repeat what I said earlier. There's no they. Meaning there's only one recipient of the money, and that's the Bedek HaBayis. But when I say they, I mean, I'm just simply saying that they are two separate obligations. So the they really is talking about the obligations. So maybe they are concurrent. And if they're concurrent, then you have five slime, so that means now that maybe we'll just simply take the five slime and we'll divide it. So you have Tartei Pagel Ahai V'Tartei Pagel Ahai. And so that means, look, again, we're holding like the Chachamim. Under the category of Hesed Yad, you still have to give everything you have. If you have five shkalim, and there are two obligations, but they're concurrent. So basically, we're going to take the five and split it. 2.5 will go to obligation number one. 2.5 will go to obligation number two because they're concurrent. On the other hand, Odilma kulu chazi lahai v'kulu chazi lahai. Or maybe no. Maybe that even though you made the pledges concurrently, but maybe though each pledge still remains independent of one another. And so that means to say that for pledge number one, you owe pledge number one five shkalim. And for pledge number two, you owe pledge number two five shkalim. Now, obviously, in your current financial status, you can only fulfill one of those two. But that's exactly the point. Meaning when you're going to give five, you can't just simply divvy up the five, 2.5, 2.5. You owe each obligation five shkalim. And so therefore, at best right now, you can only fulfill one. And then when you come into money again, so then we'll talk about fulfilling your second obligation. Teku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. The Gemara does not know how to look at concurrent obligations in this circumstance. Finally, finishing up, the Mishnah's repetitive nature at the end, what is the Mishnah telling us, which we didn't already know from reading the beginning of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah is coming to tell us that there's nothing less than a sella, but there's something more than a sella. There's nothing more than 50 shkalim, but there's something less than 50 shkalim. Meaning what the Mishnah is telling us at the end is, what's the proper way to look at it? It's a range. It goes from 1 to 50. Now 50, of course, is a maximum, 1 being the base minimum. But in other words, it could be anything in between. Why? Stamaka Rabbanan. Because the Mishnah at the end is telling us that the halacha falls like the Chachamim. Now, it is interesting that you have in the Mishnah, machlokas between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, And generally speaking, had the Mishnah not said anything more, we would have assumed the halacha falls like the Chachamim. And I need a repetitive line at the end of the Mishnah to reinforce the idea that the halacha is going to fall like the Chachamim, meaning you think we would have known that anyway, without the repetitive line. And you're going to have to say something along the lines of, Rav Meir's argument is really strong or really compelling, and the Mishnah had to reemphasize that the halacha, in fact, falls like the Chachamim. Okay. Icon. That is going to be the last we're going to see of Erchin here in the second parak of Erchin. Because now the Mishnayos are going to use this as an opportunity. We see this in Mishnayos on occasion, where the Mishnah has a certain format, and the Mishnah loves the format so much that the Mishnah is just going to take the format and now plug it into other areas in halacha. So over here, what's the format of the first Mishnah? A range. Something between the numbers of X and Y. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to do that same format and we're going to learn it in other areas of halacha. So we're going to talk now about Nida and Ziva, and we're going to talk about a range. So I'll read the Mishnah in Pesach B'Toa Pachos Mishiva V'lo Yoser Al Yudzayin. In terms of getting us to the beginning of a woman who is mistaken, so the smallest number of days is going to be 7, and the greatest number of days is going to be 17. So the range is anywhere between 7 and 17. In order to properly understand the Mishnah and the upcoming Gemara, so I'm going to be giving you a lot of information in a small amount of time. Now, if you know this information already, you're in great shape. If you need to review, so review. Rashi in the Mishnah, the first Rashi of the Mishnah, is going to say everything I'm saying right now, so you want to read the Rashi afterwards to review. Rashi is an excellent way of reviewing this as well. When it comes to a woman, so a woman is has the possibility of becoming a Nida. Not only the possibility, but regularity. Meaning that a woman is going to be Nida every time she menstruates. However, it's not that simple. And exactly what it means when she's a Nida is the following. Now, just one very, very important disclaimer. Everything I'm about to say right now is the halacha as the Torah itself presents it. We, the Jewish people, have taken upon ourselves for a very long time a chumrah, a stringency, where when a woman has any discharge of blood, so immediately we assume that she is a Zava Gadola. As you will understand, if you know this information already, so then you already understand that's a tremendous chumrah. If you don't understand yet, and you're hearing this now for the first time, so you will come to understand that that's a tremendous chumrah, but it's something that we've adopted for a very long time. We're going to see this together in the Gemara Nida. We already saw this in the beginning of Shas, some 7 years ago, in Brachos, this chumrah of Rebbe Zera. But that is, so everything I'm saying right now is correct and accurate, but it's not practice. Meaning practice is something totally different. So that is a really important disclaimer, but now the disclaimer's out there. So now I'm presenting a liba de hilchasa, not a liba de hilchasa, but a liba de Torah. This is the way the Torah views it. A woman, when she starts to discharge for her menstrual flow, for a monthly menstrual flow, we're talking obviously about uterine blood. So now she's a Nida. Min ha-Torah. That means to say is as follows. She's going to be Nida for 7 days. Now, 7 days is going to be contingent on bleeding? Yes or no? Yes or no?
No.
Right. Mostly no. mostly no. But yes meaning that the first time that she discharges for her menstrual flow, she is going to be a Nida starting at that first bleeding. And now for the next 7 days, meaning, or if you'd like to say it, if I could say it a little bit clearer, for the day of bleeding and the next 6 subsequent days, she is now Minotaur, she's going to be a Nida. And that is irrespective of the fact of whether she is going to bleed or not going to bleed, meaning she could bleed for the next 7 days or she could not bleed for the next 7 days, or again, just for purpose of clarity. She could bleed for the next 6 days, she could not bleed for the next 6 days, it doesn't matter. She is a status of a Nida. As such, she's Tamei, she's Tamea, she can't go into the base of Mikdash, she can't eat Karban, she can't eat Truma, etc., etc. She is a Nida. With all the stringencies of a Nida, she touches something, it's going to become Tamei, she sits on something, it's going to become Tamei, and etc., etc. We can go on over here, but that is Tumas Nida. Okay. Those 7 days are over, she's no longer a Nida. However, the Nida status doesn't just simply go away, she has to tov on the mikvah. The evening of the 8th day, she will tov on the mikvah and she's tahora. And she is now going to no longer be a Nida. Done. That is min ha-Torah, how the halachas of Nida work. Now, after she is a Nida, the next 11 days subsequent is what's called Yemei Ziva. It's the days of Ziva. As the Rishonim already write, it is unexpected to see any blood during that point in time. In other words, just in terms of biology, in terms of anatomy. A woman is not expected to bleed after she has her menstrual cycle. The menstrual cycle is over, so now the lining has come off, the bleeding has stopped, and she's not expected to see blood. If she has a discharge of blood during those 11 days after her Yemei Nida, so she is now what's called a Zava. Now, in terms of Tumah Zava, here is how it works. She bleeds for one day, she's what's called a Zava Katana. Now, in terms of her rectifying her situation, she's what's called a Shomer Yom Kenegad Yom. She simply now needs to wait just one day after the day in which she had a discharge during her Yemei Ziva. She'll tov on the mikvah that day, that next day, and that night she'll be Tahara. Let's say she bleeds 2 days during her Yemei Ziva. Bleeding 2 days Yemei Ziva, she still remains to be a Zava Katana. She only needs to wait Shomer Yom Kenegad Yom. She only needs to wait the next day as a day of non-discharge. Again, she'll tov on the mikvah, that night she'll be Tahara. What if she bleeds 3 consecutive days during her Yemei Ziva? She's now what's called in Halacha Zava Gedola. Zava Gedola now, a major Zava. So now that means that in order for her to become Tahara, she needs to do the following. She needs to wait Shiva Nikim, 7 clean days. And then on the 7th day of her 7 clean days, she'll tov in the mikvah. She will then, that evening, she'll be Tahara, but she's still Mechusar Kippurim. This is one of those situations in the Torah where her Tahara will only really come to an end where on day number 8, she's going to bring Karbanos to the Beis HaMikdash. Which Karbanos she's going to bring to the Beis HaMikdash? She'll bring a pair of birds. One will be a Chatzos, the second will be an Ola. And then, after she brings her Karbanos on day 8, she will be fully Tahara. Now, in terms of her resumption of her being a Nida, now, this is really important, and it gets a little bit tricky. But what I will do this morning is I will only present one side of this picture, and I'm going to present it like Rashi. The Rambam has a different viewpoint. Rashi is much easier to understand the Gemara's with. Rambam is much more difficult. On the other hand, the Rambam does have a simple way of looking at things. So, but this morning, though, we're going to present it just like Rashi, and only like Rashi. And that is as follows. When a woman now is a Nida, so that's 7 days, then she'll go through her next 11 days of being a Zava. Now again, during those 11 days, there's no blood to be expected. If there's any bleeding during those 11 days, so then go back to what I just described, as her either being a Zava Katana or a Zava Gedola. When's the next time she's going to be a Nida? According to Rashi, it's very simple. The next time she bleeds. It could be a month from now, it could be 2 months from now, it doesn't matter. Meaning the next time she bleeds is going to be the next time that her Pesach, her start of her next Nida cycle begins. So that means to say that according to Rashi, so if you can imagine a woman with a regular monthly menstrual discharge, so that means to say that if let's say, they for just purpose of illustration, in a month where, just for simplicity's sake, the month has 30 days. Just to make everything nice and simple. So that means for day 1 of the month, let's say she started her menstrual discharge, she's a Nida from days 1 through 7. Now on the calendar, from day 8 through day 18, those are Yemei Ziva. If let's say nothing happens during the Yemei Ziva, which is what should happen, nothing. So now from days 8 through 18, that's her Yemei Ziva. And now the next time that she's going to be bleeding is going to be the first day of the next month. So what is she from? From day 18 until the first day of the next month, she's nothing. Meaning she's not a Nida, she's not a Zava. What if she starts bleeding anytime between day 18 and day 1? Yes. That's her Pesach. That's going to be the opening of her next Nida. Uh-huh. Okay. Now, one other point to take into consideration. Let's say she becomes a Zava Gedola. If she becomes a Zava Gedola, so as I already explained, so she needs to wait Shiv Nikim, she has to wait 7 clean days. Now, in terms of what that means regarding her next Pesach, her next Pesach cannot come about until she experiences a Shiva Nikim. So that means to say that, let's say during a Shiva Nikim, she bleeds again. During Shiva Nikim. Okay, so now she's not a Nida because she hasn't resolved her Zava situation. So that means to say that basically now she's going to have to wait till the bleeding is over. She's going to have to start recounting the Shiva Nikim again, and then and only then afterwards can we talk about a resumption of her Pesach. So far, so good. Hopefully we have clarity on the issue. That is the schedule of a woman in terms of Nida and Ziva.
So once the Ziva period is done, what is the 7 days after Nida? Like if she starts bleeding, then we'll do another 7 days.
I didn't understand.
Like after 11 days is over, and she starts bleeding on day 12.
Right.
She has to stay 7 days?
No, what? What happened during her Yom Ziva?
No, after the Yom Ziva. After the 18.
And what happened during Yom Ziva? Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay.
The 19, she bleeds. She has to stay 7 days.
No, she's in Ida.
She's in Ida for 7 days.
Yeah. Right.
She has to go for 7 days.
Right. Okay.
And 7 days have to be clean or no? No.
No, she's in Ida during those 7 days. Well, the way Rashi presents it, you don't have to say that at all. Meaning, according to Rashi, she's a Nida for 7 days, she's a Zava for 11 days, and the next time she'll be a Nida is the next time she bleeds. Period. Right? That's how it works out according to Rashi.
Why is she a Zava for 11
days? She's a Zava for 11 days. That means to say that that's just simply a status, meaning that for the next 11 days, she has the potential of being a Zava.
Is that okay?
This is, yeah, yes. Yes.
So once she becomes a Ziva, to get out of Ziva, she needs 7 clean days. Right? Once a person.
Once she becomes a Zava Gedola.
Gedola, then she needs 7 clean days to get out of that. It's not the 19.
Correct. Okay. Now, again, by the way, that I know that was just a lot of information that was given. There's a lot to process over there. Right? This is not my first round. And so for me, like, I've seen this before, and you do get more comfortable with it the more times you get to see it. And. Don't worry. In just a short couple of months from now, we're going to be starting Masechta Nida, and we're going to be saying this again. Although, to be fair, when we get to Masechta Nida, all this information comes at the very end of the Masechta. Meaning, all this is—it's so funny. We're expected to know this from day one of the Masechta, even though the Gemara does not present this until literally the last day of the Masechta. Do we get to all this information? Okay. Now. We have a woman who literally has no idea where she is in terms of her Nida Ziva. She has no idea. She's totally in a fog. And under those circumstances, so what do we say? So now we say that she is she would like to hit the reset button, but she has no idea where she is. So basically what we're going to say is the following. Based on the number of days that she bled, plus the number of clean days that she experienced, so she can hit the reset button. Look at it this way. It's really simple to just simply see it in the following manner. If let's say she went 18 days with no bleeding whatsoever, she now knows for sure that the next day is going to be her Pesach Avenida, obviously. Meaning because, in other words, we're past, in the worst case scenario, right, the last time she bled was, let's say, her Nida. Her Nida day is fine. So that means to say that was 7 days of Nida plus 11 days of Zava, and now she's bleeding again. So now this is her Pesach for Nida. This is the first day of her Nida. So certainly if she goes 18 days without bleeding, so now we know that the next time she bleeds, it's going to be the Pesach of Nida. It's going to be day one of her Nida. But basically what we can do now is we can construct scenarios in which she doesn't have to wait 18 days. She can wait less than 18 days. Now, I'm going to go through the Gemara way too quickly than you would prefer. And I apologize about that. But basically what we're going to do, and you see a lot of Rashi over here, what Rashi does is really all the heavy lifting. And that is that we're going to basically describe she bled for X number of days, and we're going to describe the worst case scenario of the number of clean days she's going to have to wait in order for her to restart her Nida. And what I'm going to give you is really the bottom line, meaning I'm going to describe the worst case scenario. Rashi does all the heavy lifting. Rashi gives all the possibilities of what it could be based on her lack of information. And then Rashi eventually gets to, in every one of these cases, worst case scenario. So what I'll do is I'll just simply give you the worst case scenario and you'll see how all the numbers work out perfectly. Now, in terms of the numbers, we know the range already. Anywhere from 7 to 17 days. Those are the number of days that she has to be clean in order so that the next time she bleeds, she knows for sure she's starting her Nida cycle. Tana Rabbanan, we start with a Braisa. Toa Sha'amra Yom Echad Tame Reisi. She's a Toa. She has no idea where she is in terms of her cycle. And she says, but here's what I know. I know that I bled for one day. So now, Pischa Shiv Asar. So now what we're going to do is we're going to wait 17 clean days. I mean, and obviously, by the way, I'm making it sound like so simple. Like, oh, okay, fine, just wait 17 clean days. It may not come that easily, but still. So now the next time that she is going to be starting her cycle again is going to be only after 17 clean days. Why? Because again, worst case scenario. What is the worst case scenario? Worst case scenario is that one day of bleeding was day one of her Nida. So that means that day now, what's remaining in her days of Nida? 6. Now what about her Yemei Zava? 11. 6 plus 11? 17. Good. Shnei Yamim Tamei Reisi. Let's say a woman said, look, I don't know where I am in terms of my cycle, but I just bled for 2 consecutive days. So Pischa Shiva Star. So again, 17 days of non-bleeding in order to start her Pesach. So how do we get to 17? Again, it's the same thing. Worst case scenario. What is worst case scenario? Worst case scenario is that day one of her bleeding was her last day of her Yemei Ziva, and the second day of her bleeding was the first day of her Nida. And again, 6 more days of Nida, 11 more days of Zava, 17 days. Shoshi Yamim Tamei Reisi Pascha Shivasar. Let's say she says that she was 3 consecutive days bleeding. So again, worst case scenario. What is worst case scenario? Again, it's the same thing. So it comes out now that 2 days, her first 2 days were the last 11 of her previous Zava. And the third day is the first day of her Nida. And once again, 6 more days of Nida, 11 more days of Zava, 17 days. Good. Again, just, I know, I'm going to...
Could be a Ziva.
Again, I'm talking about worst case scenario. You're not providing worst case scenario. Okay.
In terms of the number of days.
Right.
Correct.
In other words, worst case scenario. Right.
It's not worse. Yeah, actually, she has relationship.
Worst case scenario means worst case scenario in terms of what would require the maximum number of non-bleeding days in order for it to restart. Arba yamim tamei reisi. So let's say she said, "Look, I have no idea where I am, but I just bled 4 consecutive days." Pischa shisha asar. So now 16 days. So now this number start tapering. And why? Because think about it. What is worst case scenario? We can't have these 3 days being the last 3 days of Yemei Zava. Why? Because if that were the case, now she's a Zava Gedola. And then all she needs to do is just wait Shiva Nakim. Ah. So in other words, worst case scenario is going to be 2 days of Yemei Ziva, 2 days of Yemei Nida, leaving us now 5 days remaining of Nida, and 11 days remaining of Zava. So that's 5 plus 11, that's 16. Chamisha Yamim Tamei Reisi. I saw for 5 consecutive days. I have no idea where I am. So Pischa Chamisha Asar. So now she's going to go 15 days. And again, think about worst case scenario. Worst case scenario is 2 days, the first 2 days of the last 2 days of the Yemei Ziva. 3 days represent the first 3 days of her Nida. So 7 minus 3 is 4. 4 plus 11 is 15. Good. Shisha Yamim Tamei Reisi. She saw for 6 consecutive days Pischa Arba Asar. So her Pesach is going to be on 14. Is going to be after 14 days of non-discharge. And again, for 6, her last days of Ziva were the first 2 days of her bleeding. Then she has an additional 4 days of bleeding during her first 4 days of Nida. So now that leaves 3 days of her Nida, plus 11, 3 plus 11 is 14. Shiva Yamin Tamei Reisi, I saw for 7 consecutive days. So Pischa Shlosha Asar. So if she wants to restart with confidence, she'll wait 13 days of non-bleeding. Why? So again, same thing. 2 days of Yemei Zova plus another 5 days of Yemei Nida. 2 days of Nida remaining plus 11, 2 plus 11, 13. Shmona Yamin Tamei Reisi, I saw for 8 days. So Pischa Shema Asar. So now 12 days. So now again, 2 of the 2 last days of Yemei Zova, plus now 6 of the Yemei Nida, only 1 more day of Nida remaining, plus 11, that's 12. Tisha Yamim Tamei Reisi, she saw for 9 days, so Pischa Achad Asar. So now her Pesach is going to be 11 days. So for 9, so that's 2, the first 2 are the last days of the Yemei Ziva, 7 are going to be the 7 of Yemei Nida. Now, the 11 days of the Yemei Zova, that's 11. Asar Yamim Tamei Reisi Pischa Asara. So now, let's say she bled for 10 consecutive days. For 10 consecutive days, 2 of Yemei Zova, 7 of Yemei Nida, and now 1 going into her next Yemei Zova. So how much does she need to wait? Now, only 10 more days. Achar Asar Pischa Tish Achar Asar. If, let's say, 11 days, she bled for 11 consecutive days, so then, Pischa Tisha. So now for 11 days, so again, two of the last Yemei Zova, seven of the Yemei Nida, so that's nine, plus another two more of this Yemei Zova, so now she only needs to wait nine more days. Shnei Masar, Pischa Shmona. Shlosha Asar, Pischa Shiva. For 12 days, 8. For 13 days, 7. Let's do this one by one. So for 12 days, so the number is going to be 8. Why? Because again, 2 of the last Yemei Zova plus 7, that's 9. And now, consider 12, so what does that mean? That means now that she is, in our worst case scenario, she bled 3 days into her Yemei Ziva. Now, it's true that she's now a Zava Gadola, in our worst case scenario. That part's true. But at the same time, and also she'll be counting Shiva Nekiyim. That part's true. But she still has to wait 8 days, not 7. Why? Because again, we're looking to start her Pesach. So it's true that she's a Zava Gadola, but even though she's a Zava Gadola, so she now waited Shiva Nekiyim, but still, there's one more day of her Yemei Ziva. So that means to say that she's going to have to wait 8 days. Shlosha Asar, so for Shlosha Asar now, she only has to wait 7 days. Why? Because in our worst case scenario, she had two of her last Yemei Ziva, plus seven of Yemei Nida, that's nine. Now she is going to go 4 days into her next Yemei Ziva. Okay, she's a Zava Gadola. She'll wait Shiva Nekiyim. At the same time, she's also completing her second Yemei Ziva. So that means to say now that she only needed to wait the Shiva Nekiyim, and then she'll be fine. She'll find meaning that the next time she bleeds, it'll be her Pesach. Okay, Adkan. Okay, that takes us to the end of the range. Now you understand the range of the Mishnah when the Mishnah talks about 7 to 17. Number of days where our Toah, our woman who doesn't know where she is, so if, based on the number of consecutive days that she bled, based on our analysis of what a worst-case scenario is, so she could be waiting anywhere within a range of 7 to 17 days in order for her to start her Pesach again.
So if it's 14, yes, she has to bring two sets of
korbanot? Ask me after. Okay. Okay. So, Amar le Rav Ada bar Ava le Rav Lama li kulei hai. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Timnei shiva v'tishtare. Well, I'm a little bit confused, says Rav Ada bar Ava. What's happening over here? Meaning, because he didn't understand what the exercise we just went through, in which, what was our goal? Our goal was to get us to her Pesach, where she knows for sure that her next bleeding is going to be the beginning of her Nida cycle. He didn't understand that. He thought that we were just talking about when she's permitted to her husband. When is she permitted to her husband? So again, anytime she bleeds anything greater than 3 days, she's a Zava Gadola. Now again, not necessarily, could be that she's a Nida, but in other words, in so many of these circumstances, so in a worst case scenario, she's a Zava Gadola, just Shiva Nekiyim, and then she'll go back to her husband. And what are we talking about? Waiting 8 days, 9 days, 10 days, right? 16 days, what's going on over here? So Amar Leila Tikuna Li De Nida Upescha Kamrinan. So Rabbi explained to Rav Ader Ba'ava, yeah, you didn't understand the exercise. Meaning we were not talking about when she's permitted to her husband. She may be permitted to her husband well before 16 days. Because, as I just explained, in other words, even under the circumstances where she's a Zava Gadola, so Shiva Nekiyim, and she's permitted to her husband. What we're describing over here is restarting the Pesach. For restarting the Pesach, then you go back to everything we just discussed. Tanu Rabbanan Kol HaTorah Zavos Mevi'in Karban Ve'eino Ne'echal. Chutz mipischa shiva upischa shmona shemivias karban v'ne'echal. Now the Gemara here takes into consideration, what about a karban? Meaning in the circumstance where we are figuring out worst case scenario. It's just that, it's worst case scenario. Meaning it doesn't have to be the way we outlined. We only outlined the cases because those are the worst case scenarios. But in other words, but if let's say she bled for 3 consecutive days, she may not be a zava at all. Those 3 days may have occurred during her Yemei Nida. When obviously under those circumstances, no karban is necessary. So, under the circumstance where she bleeds for 3 days, so she'll bring a karban after Shiva Nekiyim, but no one's going to eat the karban because the karban's a suffix. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Atu kol ato zavos v'su yom echad v'shnei yamim bas asuye karban hi. Gemara says, I am confused, meaning in the scenarios that we illustrated, so two of those scenarios where she either bled for 1 day or for 2 days. There's no karban, she's a zava katana, not a zava gadola. So Ella, so the Gemara says, fine, your point is good. We're just going to tweak it a little bit. Ella kol zavos atos mevi'is karban v'eino nechal chutz mipischa shiva pischa shmona shemivis karban v'nechal. Fine, your point is well, very well taken. Anytime she bleeds any more than 3 days and above, So the carbon will be brought, but it's not going to be consumed because we don't know for sure that she's chayav a carbon. With notable exceptions of the woman who bled for 12 or 13 consecutive days. The last two cases. Because in the last two cases, as we illustrated, in the last two cases, so there are, she's for sure going to be a Zava Gadola. For sure. So under those circumstances,
Possibly twice.
But in other words, but certainly once. So the so under those circumstances, so carbon is going to be brought, and a carbon is going to be consumed. Okay.
Because she has to bring one set to be consumed and one set to be suffic. Yes, she has to bring two sets. One set is consumed, one set is not consumed.
Possibly. If you give me some time to think about it, possibly. What you're saying makes sense. Okay. And let's quickly run through the next Mishnah and Gemara. Ein b'nagayim pachos mishavu echa v'lo yoser shlosha shavuos. In terms of a range, so it's saras. Okay, cases have not been on record for some time. However, there is an entire world of knowledge, of Torah knowledge to know regarding saras. For our purposes right now, here's what we have to know. And it's actually, I'll keep it nice and simple. Sometimes a confinement period is necessary in order to clarify the saras. For a human, maximum 1 week of confinement. For your house that has saras, 3 weeks of confinement. That's it. And that's the range. It can go anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks of confinement. Now, by the way, for an Adam, for a person, there may not be any confinement necessary. Meaning the Kohen could just simply say, look at it right away and say, oh yeah, that's the Ras. But in other words, but in a case where confinement is necessary, the maximum is 1 week. And for a house, it's going to be 3 weeks. Now, I said Adam versus Batim. You didn't see that in the Mishnah. The Mishnah, because again, the Mishnah is just interested in giving us the range. As far as the rest of the information, coming right up. So, pachos mishavu nige adam, v'lo yesar shlosha shavuos nige batim. So, when it comes to the a person, so that's a maximum 1 week confinement period. For your house, 3 week confinement period. Amara papa, and I'm not going to go through now the various circumstances in which the person or the house are going to be confined for 1 week versus 3 weeks. Just for our purposes right now, that's the range. Amra papa tzitzkascha kare kel. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Tehillim. We're familiar. It's right, the Shir Shal Yom. The Shir Shal Yom of Tuesday. So tzitzkascha kare kel. So elu nige adam. So the Gemara darshan's the pasuk. So your tzitzkus is like that of the mountain. That's a person. Mishpatecha tohom rabah. Your mishpat of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is really deep. Elu nige batim. So that's a reference to housing and the confinement for housing. And in terms of a person being judged, so 1 week. In terms of a house being judged, tom rabba. That's really deep. 3 weeks. Now the Gemara says, okay, that's drasha. Simple pshat on the pasuk, pasha de krabba mike siv. So I'm Rav Yehuda, malai tzikascha kare kel, mi yuchal la'amod lefanecha, mishpatecha tom rabba. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu, this is now we're saying pshat in the pasuk. Because your tzidkus, your charity, is so powerful, it's like mountains. So if had it not been for that, nobody would be able to withstand your mishpat, your judgment. So Rabba Amar Tzidkascha Kare El Mibnei Shemishpatecha Tom Rabba. Your tzidkus is like that of the mountain because Mishpatecha Tom Rabba. Now, I know that sounded really similar to one another. The Gemara is going to illustrate the difference between those two positions. Rabbi Lazar Amar. The Gemara now points out a machlokus in terms of how a Kadosh Baruch Hu judges us. Now we're talking about a specific circumstance, and that is where our zechuyos and our avonos are equal with one another. Okay? As I've said numerous times, it's the understatement of my life, and that is I'm not God's accountant. So in terms of the accounting of a person's mitzvah versus his averos, obviously, Kadosh Baruch Hu is the accountant. But if we can just try to understand in a scenario where they're balanced, they're equal with one another. So how are you going to be judged on Rosh Hashanah? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah brings down a machlokas in terms of what's going to happen. Now, everyone's in agreement that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to rig the system. Good. He's going to rig the system. Meaning that when everything is equal, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to make it so that our zechuyos is going to outweigh our averos. What's the mechanism in which he does so? So the Amoraim debate this very issue. And that is one of two possibilities. And the Gemara goes over both. Rebbe Lazar, I'm a Kovesh. Rabbi Elazar says, here's what he does. He takes some of the averos and he puts them under his kisei hakavod, tucks them away. And so now, so what's going to weigh down? There are mitzvahs that are going to weigh down. By the way, everything's a balance, right? The way the Gemara views it is that basically it's a scale, but scale meaning balance, where the averos on one side and the zechus on the other side. So we want the mitzvahs to weigh down. So one thing is, one methodology, one mechanism is that Kadosh Baruch Hu takes some of the averos and he just puts them away, tucks them away. Kovesh. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Amar, no say. Now Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina says, no say. Kadosh Baruch Hu basically takes his finger and lifts up the averos so that the zechuyos now weigh down. Now, I know, you're going to look for me for explaining to you what difference does it make, whether he takes averos away or he lifts up the averos. And obviously there's tremendous depth to the Gemara over here, which I just simply don't have the ability to articulate. But still, the Gemara now points out, this is going to be the difference in terms of how we understand the Pasuk. Rabbi understands the Pasuk in the manner which Rabbi Elazar just presented. Now Rabbi Elazar was subscribed to the idea of Kovesh, which means that Kadosh Baruch Hu takes the Averos and he hides them. How did Rabbi understand the Pasuk? Titkascha hare el mibnei mishpatecha tom Rabbah. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu takes it and puts it to Hom Rabbah, puts it underneath, so now the mitzvahs are going to outweigh the averus. And Rav Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanin, and Rav Yehuda holds like Rav Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. How did he understand the pasuk? He understood it as Tidkascha kare el. So, had it not been for a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mishpat, so then we wouldn't have been able to withstand. What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu do? He basically lifts up the averus. He tips the averus up, so that the mitzvahs go down. Okay.
They're still there, though, the averos.
Right, correct. Right, that part I see also very clearly. Meaning the difference whether the averos are gone or whether they're still there. Okay, and, you know, I don't know how to articulate that in any kind of practical terms, but I see it. I see it the same exact way you do. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the daf. Let's quickly recap. We covered three topics today. Our theme for the second paragraph is going to be ranges. So we covered three topics today in terms of ranges. The first range that we covered today is Erchin, range of anywhere between 1 to 50. Machlok is whether it's a range or whether they're just simply points on the number line. But the halach is like the chachamim, it's a range. So that means to say that if you commit yourself to a Erchin obligation, so obviously if you have the money, you're going to pay exactly what you committed yourself to. If you don't have the money, so then you're going to pay anywhere within the range of 1 to 50, assuming that you made a commitment of 50. The second topic we covered today was Pesach Nida, a woman who does not know whether or where she is in terms of her cycle, whether she is a Nida, whether she's a Zav, she has no idea where she is. So she bleeds and she wants to restart knowing full well that the next time she bleeds is going to be Nida. So she has to wait a certain number of days of non-discharge days in which she's going to restart. So what is that going to be a function of? It's going to be a function of the number of consecutive days she bled. And then we illustrate then the worst case scenario based on that. And then we're going to figure out exactly how many days she has to go through non-bleeding in order for her to start her Pesach again. And the third range that we did was the number of weeks of confinement. The weeks of confinement range anywhere between 1 week and 3 weeks. By Adam, it's going to be 1 week. By Batam, it's going to be 3 weeks. Adkan.